Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? For the next few episodes, we'll be doing something a little special here on Music and Booze with Mo. It is my tropical summer of cocktails. I've never made a secret of my love for tropical and tiki. I love wearing flowers in my hair. I always have. I grew up by the beach. Surfing was a big part of my life. Tiki naturally fell in line with all of that. And tiki is going through quite a resurgence, revival. There are many, many things going on in the tiki world and the tropical world, so I took it upon myself to talk to various friends and colleagues and new friends about their lives in the tiki world, and it's been tons of fun talking to these folks about their tropical creations and such. So join us for the summer as we have Mo's Tropical Summer on Music and Booze with Mo. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store. Super excited for this episode because we have two people today, one from the world of music, Jean-Paul Balick, and one from the world of booze, Marie King. And we're going to just jump right into it because we had a lot to say. Jean-Paul plays with Tiki Yaki Orchestra and Insect Surfers and many more. And Marie comes from Don the Beachcombers and currently Tonga Hut in North Hollywood as well as Palm Springs. So let's just get into it with them. They are fabulous people. And this was a lovely, lovely way to spend an afternoon. Okay, tell everybody who you are. We're going to jump back to Marie in a minute. So I wasn't recording, and I was supposed to be recording, so we're starting this off a little funny. I'm still going to tell the story, but I'm sitting here talking with
Jean-Paul Balick,
who plays with a whole bunch of bands. And I'm just going to start with this story, and we'll get back to it. I was talking with John Reese from Rocker from the Crypt, and he brought you up, and he said, That guy that plays in Tiki Yaki Orchestra, and he says, Jean-Paul, you know all this. He goes, that guy, he just reeks of metal, doesn't he?
Is it that obvious still? Really?
And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he played in some metal bands. He's like, oh yeah, you could just smell it on him.
That's great. Well,
so since we lost 2 minutes to where you thought we were recording, tell people what you played with and who you play with now.
I play the electric bass guitar. Mm-hmm.
Was that in your metal days?
No, actually, I started off, that was six string. I played full on heavy metal guitar when I started as a kid, nice. Actually. And then picked up bass way later, coming full circle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I play in the surf and exotica genres. And the two main bands are Insect Surfers, which next year will have been around 40 years.
40?
40, four decades. It is planet Earth's longest running modern surf band. This is true. Yeah, so
wow,
that's full-time, and I play full-time with Tikiaki Orchestra and Tikiaki 5-0. Mm. But I still love playing the music almost more than almost anything else, and if I get asked, we'll usually be able to step in.
The surf. Well, do you still, do you miss playing metal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I want to...
You should see his move sometimes. That's so metal.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's true. I have a friend that always says, you can take the boy out of the metal, but you can't take the metal out of the boy.
I think that's true.
I think it's true for any of our deep roots musically. I think mm-hmm. the first genre that you really identify with as a kid, mm-hmm. if you're a music head, I mean, if you're that kind of fanatic about it, I think it always stays with you a little bit, you know? Like if the first thing you gravitate towards is rockabilly, you're always going to be a little rockabilly, you know? Or goth, or, you know, if you're one of those shoegaze people, or
shoegaze people.
Whatever. Like, it's always going to be kind of at your core and deep in there, and comes out from time to time, you know? Especially if you still play music, that's going to seep out every once in a while.
So I interviewed this guy a couple weeks ago. Marie probably met them. It was Corey from Three Dots and a Dash out in Chicago. And Corey, this will bounce to both of you. So Corey, when I was talking with him and asking him about his musical past, he had played metal guitar. And he's like, I play electric uke too. I'm like, oh, look at you. Yeah, and he said his dream would be to have a metal tiki bar.
Isn't that Kindred?
Kindred is a death metal Kindred. Vegan bar. Yeah.
Okay.
So just for anyone, because I wasn't recording from the beginning, we now have...
This is Marie King.
Marie King.
I'm with the Tonga Hut.
With Tonga
Hut. LA's oldest tiki bar.
She could probably speak to a metal tiki bar too. But we kind of talked about it.
As long as she wasn't curating the music, that
would work. Yeah, don't
See,
give
this could me, be no. like a collaboration between you two.
Oh, my God.
We decided the most metal tiki drink would be a zombie. But I don't know. Like existing tiki drink?
I don't know. Hurricane?
Oh, that could be too. That could be too.
Hurricane?
So, well, so yeah.
Here's the question. Would each drink have to be some kind of pun song title? I think it has to.
Well, you think there would be some classics, right? And then maybe a whatever the death metal. Or no, death metal vegan tiki is Kindred. And they do Permanent Vacation, where they make tropical drinks, but they don't go so far as calling them tiki. I think they're being respectful of the tiki crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But their drinks are fantastic over there. So if you had a metal tiki drink, you'd pick out whichever existing tiki drinks were already pretty metal to begin with. And then, I guess, expand from there. Marie is a great creator of cocktails. So
I have my moments.
Well, let's tell people about your past. First off, everyone listening probably already knows, but for those cocktail nerds that don't know so much about tiki, you have a long and storied career.
Storied, long-ish. 2008, I helped open the first new Don the Beachcomber to open in 30 years. Yeah. And I got a couple recommendations for that job. I didn't have a lot of managerial experience, but I stepped into the role and, you know, played with the rums that were there and the existing Don the Beachcomber recipes. And I think we came up with a really, really beautiful product. And then I was able to learn and expand my own talents. Had a car accident in 2010, didn't work for a few years, and was fortunate enough to come over to Tonga Hut.
Mm. And you know, I think Adrian, fellow podcaster inside the Desert Oasis Room, when the current incarnation of Don's was closing up, I think I was telling you this, and people were saying, oh, what are some really memorable moments from Don's? What kept coming up was Maria Palooza.
Yeah, Maria Palooza was a great... Too bad I couldn't be there.
Yeah. Oh, I know, right?
How many bands played? Like 20 bands?
A lot of bands.
Many, many bands. Everybody in the scene, both Tiki and Surf, came together in a real familial way to support you, and it was it was an amazing blessing.
Yeah, I was so blessed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I adore about the Tiki community is just the family that is created within it. And when I heard about that, it made me cry, and I didn't know you yet, and I was just like, God, you know, I would have worked the table, I would have done this, you know, I would have fallen into the same thing.
Yeah, I'm humbled beyond belief at how everyone stepped up and everyone's what they did and the art that was created and the ohana that was going on, the feeling of family and love that happened in that room, you know. And that's not just because of me, it's because of the scene.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate, the circumstances, but, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, we're all blessed.
You're a very much a like a person that everyone adores in the scene. But so are you, Jean Paul. We can pass the mic back over to Jean Paul and you can tell me about it. You don't know why.
No,
I don't know,
I
maybe
really
because
don't.
Your other half a little bit, maybe because you're talented,
yeah,
everybody
maybe
loves
it's
your
all
band.
Her.
No. I get my
cool
my
from
perks
him.
From him.
perks.
Going to Italy every year, maybe. That's a bit of a perk. You get to go to a surfer show.
That's pretty, pretty amazing.
When did you transition over into playing the surf and getting so into the tiki world? You know, I mean, I guess by playing the surf bands, you're automatically pulled into.
Yeah, the tiki came actually before that.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, in a practical way. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was traveling. I was out and about traveling all over the place. Came back in 2000 and was home and needed to figure out what the heck to do. And I decided that I wanted to go back into a different career path. So I went back to school for photography to do it as a living. And
that's where we met.
At school?
Yeah.
Yeah, photography school.
Ooh,
and
we'll
that's where
that.
We met. But I had a couple very influential professors that always says, shoot what you like. Shoot the things that interest you personally, and you'll never work a day in your life. And so I was just really starting to research and study and school myself on tiki, and that was right about the time
we met.
So we were kind of learning about it together early on, and I just started shooting tiki stuff, something we'd find at the swap meet or the garage sale or a drink or whatever, just for
and the bands,
yeah,
the surf bands
and bands, but mostly the tiki stuff. And it just kind of all started to snowball. And I met Nick Camara from Tiki Magazine and started working with them right away from issue number one, and just got deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into both. They both kind of happened concurrently. And more opportunities started presenting themselves. And, you know, the more you do, the more things happen. Mm-hmm. And it kind of all just took off from there. And pretty soon, you know, I was doing Sipping Safari with Jeff Berry and
the
Carrero Tiki Mugs book. And
he did the zombie picture of Jeff.
Oh, really?
And most of the modern photos
that are in, there.
In the book. Yeah, yeah. And that's how, kind of coincidentally, I started getting really deep into tiki drinks, because Jeff and I were making the drinks in the kitchen.
Oh, wow.
Bringing them out, and then I would
help. You at Don's at that time, or was
no,
it?
No,
no. No, it was before that. You were just helping out.
It's the 10th anniversary, so it was two years before that, so 2006.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's a good
2006.
Schooling.
And then I'd come out and assist him in the shoot.
Oh, wow.
So we were all doing it, and then we'd sit around and drink rum after, and I was just literally sponging information off of Jeff and absorbing everything and studying the grog log and Intoxica and learning from that, bringing it into the bar that I was working at.
Oh, wow.
And then
which was not a tiki bar.
Which was not a tiki bar, but it was kind of faux tropical on the beach.
So
and
you could get away with bringing
I could
in
get
these
away
kinds
with
of
it.
Drinks.
And I was bringing in bands on Sundays, like the Smokin' Menahonies and things like that. And Bill Tapia, the Ook, the Ook player that just passed away a few years ago. And because of that, Don the Beachcomber was right down the street. That's where they recommend some people, like Bamboo Ben, Jeff Berry, recommended me for the Don the Beachcomber position.
Oh, wow.
We'll be right back.
intertwined. Both of our careers have been very intertwined in this.
It's perfect. That's why I was so happy when you were like, you want John Paul too? I'm like, yes. I'd love to have both of you here because it seems like
it is. Most of the time we're working separately, but when we do have an event or something where we're together, it really feels good. It's a very cool, special opportunity for us to be able to work together, for sure.
So when you were doing all this photography and working with, you know, you're getting to meet these people in the tiki scene and everything, how did you get pulled into the band stuff? You just started meeting, since you were booking bands, I guess, and they were around, once you started talking, it was...
No, it was actually totally separate from that.
Really?
I was actually working somewhere where Dave Arnson, the leader of Insect Surfers, was a frequent customer. I mean, maybe once a week he would come in. And just through small talk, we just kept talking and we got closer and closer. And then sort of a friend situation, at some point he realized that I played, or used to play, actually more accurately. Oh, you used to play? Or you play? Oh, you know, hey, would you want to sit in with us on a song? So there was a party and I sat in on a song, and then he realized I was competent enough to get through it. And then shortly thereafter, there was a party gig and he said, hey, our bass player can't make it. Can you fill in? And that's kind of
when it started.
Sort of everything started. And I started playing with the Boardwalkers and Insects about the same time. And it was like a master class for me, just being thrown into it.
Yeah.
From not, basically, long story short, I used to play as a kid in high school, and it was my life. That's all I did. That's all I wanted to do. Everything was about the band and, you know, the success of the band and the future of the band. And that stopped, and then I went back to school full-time to do music. I wanted not just to be a performer, but I wanted to know what I was playing. So I went back to school and got my degree in musicology. And then I traveled and was on a totally different path, but stopped playing practically. I was still listening and still absorbing the music like crazy.
I was going to say, were you two in your head with it at that time?
Or? No, it was just...
I shouldn't say two in your head. Yeah, it was in your head more.
It was definitely more of a self-realization period, but not in musical ways. That was kind of already being taken care of in other ways.
And he was exploring world music. He plays the sitar and the Japanese flute and
all
these Baroque instruments. And, you know, it wasn't like practical, hey, let's go play a gig, you know? So that sort of faded when he got academic about it. And then, you know, when there wasn't the opportunity to be academic anymore and he got into photography, I think it waned. And fortunately, when we were together, you know, I was able to help inspire him, I think.
Well, also, through meeting more people that wanted to play and were hungry, and that started to feed.
It brings that enthusiasm.
Yeah, that
back.
Started to inspire me, and I started thinking, I should be playing again. And I realized how much I was missing it, and how much it was a part of me, it was in my life, and it needed to be back in my life. And so I just started practicing like crazy and just woodshedding like insane amounts of time.
I think we got him his first bass at a pawn shop.
No, I borrowed Jeff Hansen's bass.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jeff
so
had a bass.
Jeff already at that point.
Yeah. I met Jeff in 2000.
And was he doing the festival then?
No.
Not yet?
Not yet.
So Jeff Hansen does a Surf Guitar 101 festival for anyone who is into that and hasn't heard of it.
Yeah, but we were friends from 2000. And we're just geeks, surf geeks. We're always at the same shows, we're always hanging out. And this opportunity arose, and I borrowed his bass for a while and then started getting my own. But yeah, that's how it all happened.
And then you were back in it.
Yeah, totally back in it.
And I was going to say way back in it, because if we look at you now.
Well, now I can't even imagine my life without any of it. And it's become the biggest part of what I do. You know, it's pretty amazing to think of that path.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we both. We constantly comment about how lucky we are and how fortunate we are for these careers that revolve around what we love to do.
Yeah, the twist, I was going to say, the twist that life took to get you into it. So, I mean, now you're at Tonga Hut. And so when you left Dawn's, well...
Didn't work for 2 years.
Yeah.
You were, and then almost you just, shy, 2 months shy of 2 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so when you were finally able... Mm-hmm. to get back to work. Was it Tonga that you went back to?
Absolutely.
That's where you went?
Yeah, it took me almost a year to get to walking again.
Oh, God.
And then, no offense to any doctors out there, but the American medical system kind of failed me. It really did. And I was able to, through my family in Poland, get some intense rehab in Poland.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I spent 3 months over there.
I was
like,
you went to Poland to get fixed?
Yeah.
You must have been dying without her.
Yeah.
Did you? I'm like.
But we knew that it had to be done.
Of course, yeah.
We knew it had to be done.
Yeah.
My family's all physicians over there, and they have.
Oh, wow.
They have what they call a sanatorium I lived at for a few weeks, 6 weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. Anywho, it's got back to it.
It should have been the sanitarium.
yeah, I'm still not
Wrong
sane.
Building.
Yeah, that was next door.
You could visit.
Yeah, and then I did a guest bartending shift February 12th of 2012.
At
and
Tonga?
And was offered a position, and then a week later asked to manage. And a month later, pretty much signing checks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they needed help. They needed direction. They didn't have anyone that had the back of house, front of house
experience
that could meld the two and rework the menu and make sure that people were getting paid on time and stock was in. I mean, that was the hardest thing. If you don't have things in stock, you can't serve the grog log.
Yeah.
And the grog log is our big savior at the Tonga Hut. That's, you know, our biggest money-making endeavor.
When did the grog log start?
Started in 2010.
Okay.
It started in 2010, but it wasn't until I came in and was able to digitize the inventory and make sure that we could make every drink every day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did it in 2013.
Yeah.
So I guess then you'd only been there like a year and a half or so
when
I started doing that.
Yeah.
That's fun, though. That's definitely something.
Absolutely.
I feel like I don't know how many people have barreled through it at this point.
I would guess between 700 and 800.
God, that's
maybe
crazy.
But maybe 600, but there's only about 150 plaques on the wall, so it's a really bad judge of how many people have actually finished.
So while you were at Tonga Hut, not only were you maintaining the grog log, which to me is, I think it's really interesting because they started that before you came, but you have this past with Jeff Berry.
Right.
So you...
Well, he is our godfather.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at all modern tiki bars, and even though Tonga Hut is a vintage tiki bar, its cocktail program is quite more... It's much more modern.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have that for a long time, the consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing about consistency and knowing about these recipes, it really stems from Jeff. If it wasn't his research and his dedication and his publications... We wouldn't have this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you've gone on to, you are very much a superstar in the tiki world and the rum world anyway.
Hardly.
She's like, hardly, yeah, but you get invited out. You just spent all of June on the East Coast, like representing Tonga Hut and being like a super taster of rums and all of that. How did that all
just
happen
blessed.
To you?
You know, being at the right time at the right place in 2012, things were just starting and I already had a bit of a pedigree. So, you know, meeting Forrest and getting invited to the rum festivals. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just, I guess I have a big mouth. I don't know. I know how to.
No comment.
Able to be articulate and prolific and keep up on the trends and be on the forefront of what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's really put me in a good position. And then, you know, also being able to have good drinks and have my verbal reputation be followed up by actual cocktails that people can walk in and say, yeah, okay, she knows what she's doing, you know, and there I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah.
You either have it or you don't. You're born with it or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like being a cook. You could teach, you could learn the
techniques. Were you a food person before? Because you balance your drinks so well. I love, love, love your cocktails.
You.
She's
Thank
heard
you.
Me say this a gazillion times. You're my favorite one there. Sorry, other Tonga Hut bartenders. I love you all, but Marie just makes my favorite drinks. But and that, to me, that's definitely a skill that not everyone is born with.
You know? No, and I didn't have any...
I know, I'm like, that's all right. I could close the door.
No, it's going,
There we go. Yeah, that's definitely a skill that people
It's a
are
skill
born with.
That I wasn't trained. My mother literally kicked me out of the kitchen because she didn't want to have to clean up after me. So I never had...
Oh. Can you blame her?
You know my mother. I taught myself.
She seems quiet, but I would fear her.
Oh, she has that look. She does the.
Yep, oh, we've got.
Be afraid.
We've got mother-in-law chipping in here.
Be very afraid.
A lovely lady, I'm sure, however. Yes. So she kicked you out of the kitchen.
She wouldn't let me in the kitchen, so I'm literally self-taught. You know, you go to a restaurant, you taste something, you like it, you want to replicate it at home, mm-hmm. and then you always put your own spin on it. You mm-hmm. make it better. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of my philosophy with tiki drinks as well. You take a classic, but you can twist on it. Mm-hmm. I'm also tasting all these rums, so when I taste a rum, if it has... you know, smokiness to it, I'm going to gravitate towards something Demerara or something mm-hmm. smoky and know what flavors go with that mm-hmm. and how to boost that particular rum or what I want to balance with that rum,
yeah.
you know, to bring out all the accents. And that's just
that
experience.
Takes like, yeah, I was going to say, that's that takes experience. A lot of training yeah. and lessons and all of this. Like, I mean, I've had a lot of rum in my day. I've go to lots of tastings of things, whiskey and all this mm-hmm. stuff. I still don't think I would be able to... better, yeah. but that's, I mean, right. you have a knack for it.
Yeah, and I hone that skill at Don the Beachcomber because you're given a recipe that says aged Martinique rum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
But there's 7 or 8 aged Martinique rums on the market, or back then maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So I would either ask for a sample or get mm-hmm. a bottle of each one. Mm-hmm. And
that's
then
what I get for leaving the door open. But I right. usually do these interviews in bars. So this is silence compared to what the listeners right. are used to.
But then you try 3 or 4 of those rums in the cocktail and you're yeah. like, all right, this one tastes good. This one doesn't. Mm-hmm. This one tastes good, but the price is off. So I'm going to go with this one or, you know.
Yeah.
So
all the factors
that
come into
led
play.
Me to be able to develop a cocktail mm-hmm. program.
Yeah.
You know, trial and error.
Yeah. So when you are doing Rum Renaissance, for example, you're actually tasting and judging, aren't you, when you're out there?
Yes. It's yeah. blind judging.
It's blind judging.
Yes.
So what's that all? I mean, I've never done that before. Do they give you criteria that you're supposed to be judging on when you call out to do that?
No, you know your criteria from being a judge, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. every competition has different scales. You know, you have a certain number of points for clarity or color of the rum mm-hmm. and then aroma, taste, and finish. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of know from experience, all right, this distillation on this rum is off. You know, they mm-hmm. maybe had too many cuts or tails in it, heads or tails in it, and something's not right, or you could tell when there's glycerin wow. added. And you just know these things from
yeah.
experience,
yeah.
from trying a mm-hmm. lot of them. This particular festival, their categories might be a bit antiquated for what's going forward with mm-hmm. a lot of the people that are in the forefront of our industry, you know, Gargano and, mm-hmm. and Seal and people like that are trying to reorganize the categories, mm-hmm. which is going to be a blessing to our industry because mm-hmm. we can actually put the industrial rums into one category, which
oh,
is
cool.
90% of what you get in America anyways. Mm-hmm. And then be able to judge the others on their own criteria. You know, they're non-industrial. So there'll be a category for pot still, a category for column still, a category for blended pot and column, mm-hmm. you know, and then aging.
So this is something that's being
worked on right now.
There's, interesting.
Martin Kate has categorization. Richard Seal has a categorization. Gargano in Italy has a categorization, and they're going to have to try to meld it and see what the competitions going forward are going to categorize
like.
As. The antiquated system is to put silver together and gold mm-hmm, together, mm-hmm. but you can have a 5-year-old aged rum that's mm-hmm. silver.
There
so
are
why
so
does it,
many variations on rum out there.
Right. So why does
many.
It belong? That's why
yeah.
if you categorize by distillation process and aging process, because mm-hmm. your flavor of your rum comes from 3 things. Mm-hmm. Fermentation, distillation, and maturation. That's the only way your flavor should come from rums. Even a spiced rum, you put the spices in the barrel mm-hmm. and you get it through maturation. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with spiced rums. What's wrong with spiced rums is when you throw cinnamon
when
extract
they...
into it after the fact, you know? Or banana, whatever.
Whatever. Well, what are some of the more modern current rums that you're enjoying right now that you would recommend to people?
Super fierce in the market right now is Real McCoy, which comes from mm-hmm. Richard Seals Distillery. Mm-hmm. Props to our buddy Nathan. they have a yearly special edition, and their 2017, which was a 10-year, it's a blend of 10-year Virgin American Oak blended with the Real McCoy 12 is outstanding, mm-hmm. outstanding. And then new to the market, hopefully hitting California soon, Velier has Ooh. Just released in California.
Okay.
Which is Luca Gargano's private label.
Wow.
He sources the rums from different distilleries and then releases it under his private label. Mm-hmm. Also coming to California is Trois Rivières, Three Rivers from okay. Martinique, which is outstanding. Rum Bar should be here soon, which is Worthy Park from Jamaica.
Cool.
So we'll have another Jamaican on our shores. there's so much going on right now. It's amazing.
You know, actually, in doing these interviews and talking with bartenders from across the spectrum, something that I'm hearing a lot right now is a fondness and appreciation for agricole rums. Mm. And in the same voice that I've heard people speak in the past about mezcals. Mm-hmm. I think they're having a good time working with agricoles, which, of course, Tiki's worked with for a long time. And I don't know if you've had that bounce around.
Oh, my gosh. Agricoles, absolutely. Yeah. First time I had an agricole at Don the Beachcomber, I came up with a drink with it. And the owners were like, you can't serve this. Nobody's going to like it. It's not sweet and fruity. I'm mm-hmm. like, but it is sweet and fruity. It's just a different kind of sweet and fruity.
And I think bartenders are starting that push
absolutely.
To the, out in the non-tiki world to get people to drink agricoles and absolutely. Appreciate agricoles out there. So
there's an American agricole that's mm-hmm. hit the market that we're teaming up with at Tiki Oasis called Caneland from Baton Rouge.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Well, yeah, cool. He's a cool guy. You should talk to him for sure.
Yeah, it tails.
For sure, because he's an old punker from OC.
Sweet.
Yes.
Love it.
He's now making rum in Baton Rouge.
I wonder what band he was in. He's like...
Can I just play sort of dumb listener for a second?
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm just thinking, if I was listening and I didn't know what an agricole rum was, mm-hmm. can you explain what that is?
Yes. Thank you, John Paul. An agricole rum is a rum or a cane spirit that is distilled from sugarcane juice directly, an agricultural product, hence the name agricole, rather than molasses, which mm-hmm. most rums are distilled from molasses, which is, some people might say, an agricultural byproduct, but it's always been a product. It just was not as popular as sugar was. But they were dumping the molasses because they didn't have as big of a market for it back in the 17th century on these plantations in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And some Irishmen, Scotsmen, Englishmen walked by and went, that smells like something my grandfather made, you know, and realized you can make booze from this.
From the dumped molasses.
Right. Mm.
But the agricole doesn't have that.
But then in the 17th century, the French figured out that it was cheaper to make, well, two things. Slavery ended. Mm-hmm. There goes the cheap labor. And rather than having to grow the cane in the Caribbean and bring that product back to France, you can make sugar from beets, and beets grow in France. So they had to figure out something new to do with the sugar cane. Mm-hmm. So they would press the juice and make the rum directly from the juice, which gives it a more terroir, earthy, mm-hmm. sort of funky flavor, and hence rum agricole. So it's kind of the sister of cachaça, but it's a totally different distillation, fermentation, and maturation process. Mm-hmm. But it has those earthy qualities like cachaça. Exactly. So, which makes me think, agricole is popular now, cachaça is coming soon.
Yeah.
And Avo is doing a great job with introducing top shelf cachaças to the American market.
Totally, totally. So I can actually, we can continue to bounce back to John Paul. Well, we'll stick with you for a second since you mentioned, you know, we've got the modernization talk and the being on the forefront of new tiki stuff. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of discussion around classic tiki and future tiki mm-hmm. out there, and people who love the classic and, you know, would love for a tiki bar to open and just just represent that and mm-hmm. people who are enthused about newer tiki bars that open up and represent other things. So where do you see, what have you seen? Where do you see it going?
Like, I see stuff? Anything that's promoting Brahma.
It's metal
a good
tiki,
thing.
Right? It's metal
tiki. Well,
yeah,
tiki. Of course.
That's
metal
where we're
tiki
going.
Absolutely. And then as long as it doesn't go into the long hair metal tiki, that might be like the... Yeah.
Oh. All right. Just wait.
That's like the de-evolution of tiki.
No.
De-evolution
no.
Of metal.
You're not...
Long hair.
Long hair is all metal. Long hair. Sorry. What are you trying to say? You're trying to say hair metal. That's a whole different thing.
I'm not the music person in a family.
Yeah, that's a totally different thing. Anyway.
Well, you've been involved in tiki for a long time, too, and you're in the band side of it and mm-hmm. everything. So what do you see from your involvement of tiki?
Here's my take on it. I think that any kind of pop culture subcategory like that mm-hmm. that grows that big has to adapt with the times. It has to move with the times. And it also allows for people to have a much more open mind about it mm-hmm. and incorporate new things and have it evolve. Everything has to evolve. Everything's an evolution. Mm-hmm. And I think that at a certain point, it's okay to have subdivisions within the subdivision. A lot of people say, well, that's just being too pedantic. But mm-hmm. I think anyone that actually studies this stuff intellectually or from an academic standpoint, or the ones that are saying this is this, putting it into nice little subcategories, you know, people like Sven Kirsten or people like Jeff Barry or the scholars of mm-hmm. this, you know, this pop cultural phenomenon, mm-hmm. no one's saying, oh, you're being too pedantic, because they're the people that are writing the books and they're telling it how it is. Mm-hmm. I think along with that, having that open mind and studying it, being a true scholar of the industry, you have to have now, this is now not just tiki, but maybe this is called traditional tiki. Mm-hmm. Or over here, this is modern tiki, mm-hmm. or this is, you know what I'm saying?
Metal tiki.
Right. You now have some kind of prefix that designates what kind of tiki this mm-hmm. is, because I think there's so much of it.
There's such a huge group of people in the scene. As we were saying before, you've got goth kids that are into tiki. You've got metal kids that are into tiki. You've got, like, you know, the rockabilly kids that are into tiki. You've got, mm-hmm. like, you know.
And everyone's into it for a different reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, some are into it because they like the music. Some are into it because they like the throwback vintage cocktail culture. Mm-hmm. Some people want the progressive modern cocktail mm-hmm. culture and see tiki as the forefront of that.
Mm-hmm. Some people just love the art. Right. Got pulled into other stuff.
Right. But I think it's okay. I think all of it can be tiki. You know, there's a very serious and dangerous thing happening right now in the tiki world with certain people that I...
that you love,
no offense, no offense, but I'm, you know, call them tiki Nazis because they flat out will tell you, this is tiki, this is not tiki. And that is very, very, very dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because at the core, there really is a subjective element to it. Mm-hmm. And there is a certain fun involved in the whole thing at the bottom line.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
I think that's why a lot of people came.
Yes.
Most people, when you talk to them about tiki, say, it's so fun.
It's fun. And it's important to retain that fun and that goofiness with mm-hmm. it.
Hold dads and Grammys, say you reach.
to say that some clown tiki aberration, you know, is on the same level as some kind of historic precedent, you know, of a famous carver, mm-hmm. a well-known carver, or an indigenous oceanic art piece, mm-hmm. of course it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And to be able to differentiate that is important. But you can still call this tiki.
Yeah.
I mean, it. Yes, have a prefix to it. Call it clown tiki. Yep. Call it bad tiki. Call it fake tiki. Call it whatever you want. But
Home Depot tiki.
Yes.
But, you know, you can't take that away from people. Because as soon as you start telling people, waving the finger and saying, mm-hmm. no, it starts to turn into a negative thing.
Yeah.
And then it ruins it for everybody.
Fun.
No.
And it is a market economy. If people are going to buy that stuff, then they're going to buy that stuff. Mm-hmm. If we all know and like what we like, true artisan stuff, and we support that, then that's what's going to go forward.
Too.
And that's going to survive.
Sorry.
You know, so support your local artists, support your local bar.
Absolutely.
The things that you don't like, don't support.
Yeah,
you know, if you can differentiate between clown tiki and good traditional, you know, something that has a base in traditional art, mm-hmm. put your money there. Mm-hmm. Don't buy the clown tiki. Mm-hmm. Don't support that, and it won't sustain itself, mm-hmm. you know? So going forward with the bars, you know, do I want to see an open air Caribbean style bar call itself tiki? You know, It's a whole package. If the drinks mm-hmm. are good, the music is good, the energy is good, then yeah, it's a tiki
then
bar.
Have a good time.
Yeah, then have a good time. So what that there's windows that look down 6th Avenue or 44th Avenue or whatever, you know, in New York City. It doesn't have to be dark and cavernous like the Tonga Hut is. Mm-hmm. That is classic tiki. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. is more modern tiki. Mm-hmm. But if the drinks are good, the Ohana's there, you know, and the space is warm and inviting, mm-hmm. whether it's dark or light, mm-hmm. it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, welcome.
I mean, there's a fine line. There do have to be certain parameters. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you leave it too open-ended, then, you know, it becomes a catastrophe. So
yeah, and I agree. I was just in New York City, and it was a great bar. The cocktails mm-hmm. were fantastic, mm-hmm. but I had a hard time calling it a tiki bar.
Mm-hmm. Because, but more of a tropical bar, maybe.
Well, there were certain tikis in there, okay. but none of the drinks on the menu were rum-focused. And they did that on purpose.
Really?
There was not a rum cocktail that I could see. Of course, it was dark, it was night, and it was, you know, our third stop or whatever. So I didn't read every single cocktail. But when I looked for something, the first 15 drinks I looked at didn't have rum in them.
Hmm. What's a hotel bar, right?
What?
Is it a hotel bar?
No.
No, different
no
one?
It's a standalone.
Okay.
That being said, mm-hmm. you know, we had some snackeries and left. Got to check it out. I don't know if I would necessarily call it a tiki bar.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, people do, yeah. and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I wouldn't even call it a Caribbean bar because it didn't have that flavor mm-hmm. either. It was its own entity.
Mm.
And that's great.
That's cool.
You know, and it does well and it's popular.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were talking about Kindred at the beginning of this down in San Diego, which has never marketed itself as a tiki bar, but they love tiki drinks. They love tropical drinks, and they market themselves as a death metal vegan bar, which mm-hmm. you walk in there, and they are. There's death metal playing. There's, like, you know, that head on the wall with mm-hmm. the six eyes and snakes for, mm-hmm. ear, like, ram horns or whatever, and a lot of tropical drinks on the menu and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think they've been very widely accepted by the tiki community, and I think part of it is because they have a respect for tiki, but don't
right.
call themselves that.
One of
There's
my favorite...
There's no decor in there that yeah. represents tiki at all. There's nothing.
Yeah,
you know?
One of my absolute favorite bars in the world that we went to last year was mm-hmm. Cane and Table.
Oh, I love Cane and
They don't call
Table.
Themselves a tiki bar, nope. but they respect the classic tiki drinks and they mm-hmm. make them very, very,
well.
Very, very,
very well.
Well.
Mm-hmm. And tiki you know? Folks love them. I
yeah.
love that bar.
I love that bar.
It's great. We're going there in a week,
yeah,
right?
Can't
we'll
wait.
Be there in a week.
Which is didn't get recorded in the first part of this interview,
yes.
but we've been talking about this since Last Tales, which was just
yes.
about a year ago. And here we are going back
I was
to
just
Tales
starting.
This year.
I was just starting to do this podcast last year. I'm like, yeah. I'm going to get a bunch of interviews together. I'm like, I got to interview you. Oh, we can do that back in LA.
Yeah.
And it's taken a year. But here we are. So actually, John Paul, I wanted to ask you, kind of in the same lines of the future of tiki and all this stuff, because you're on the music side of everything, mm-hmm. and you're playing with these bands. And also something that I didn't press play on was, we were talking about Swami John Rhys and the Blind Sheikh and that album, I'm forgetting what it's called. Is it Modern Surf Classics? And that to me is a fantastic modern surf record.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know? It's thrilling and crazy. So what else out there would you throw out at people to check out? What else is sounding new, you know, in that tiki world? Because it's very easy to get caught up in the past.
Funny you mention. I mean, the surf is really, really important to me. It's mm-hmm. a huge, huge part of my life. Mm-hmm. And
you just got back from Italy.
Yeah, we just played the Surfer Joe Summer Festival.
And how many years have you been playing?
This is the 6th year in a row that we've gone. I haven't played every year. Mm. Played most of the time, but we've gone 6 years in a row, mm-hmm. and it's an absolutely amazing experience. And you know, we were talking about the camaraderie earlier, and the feeling of family within a certain scene, mm-hmm. and nowhere do I feel that more than with the surf scene, especially the international surf scene, and being able to be in Italy and celebrate a music that was formed and began in Southern California is an amazing thing. And to be in the midst of so many people that are so passionate about the same thing and come from all over the universe. I mean, you're talking about, there's a tiny handful of actual Southern California people there, mm-hmm. but most of the people hail from places like Russia or Ukraine or Italy mm-hmm. or Germany, or I mean, all Spanish over the world. It's unbelievable.
So cool.
It's truly unbelievable. So it's an amazing scene, but it's very difficult to point out particular bands or say one or another mm-hmm. because there are so many. It is absolutely unbelievable the way surf has spread all over the world at this point. And I would recommend, I do a 2-hour radio show every Saturday from 2 to 4 Pacific on luxuriamusic.com, which is a local LA station. I'm the surf guy on the station. Mm-hmm. So every Saturday for 2 hours. And it's gotten to the point where most of the shows these days is mostly new music mm-hmm. because there's so much coming out, and it's coming out all the time from all over the place. And it's very difficult to keep up. It's almost a full-time job just to keep up with what's coming out. So I would say, listen to the show. You'll be hip to all the new surf music that's coming out from all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And it is such a worldwide phenomenon now. You go to Surfer Joe and you have bands from Brazil and Argentina, Japan. Yeah. Don't get him started on Japan. He's turned into a Japanophile now. Europe, America, both ends of America, all four corners of America.
And Canada.
And was there... Yeah, I can't even remember all the bands.
So what is the name of your radio show?
It's called Fiberglass Jungle.
Okay.
And again, it's 2 to 4 Pacific every Saturday afternoon on luxuriamusic.com.
Are there a couple bands you want to throw out right now, or just... Go there.
You know what? There's too many. There's really too many. And, you know, another thing, concurrently, I've been working on this book. I'm working on a book on the surf music revival.
Oh, my God.
It's the first really thorough and all-encompassing history of the surf music revival. Mm-hmm. So it's literally from 1979 to present.
To now? Wow.
And more has happened in that amount of time. And more is happening right now than ever happened in the first wave of surf in the early 60s. Way more. So
I almost feel like that's the same could be said for tiki in a way.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the original tiki movement versus everything that's been blowing up over the last like 10 mm-hmm. years.
Yeah, it's absolutely exploding. Yeah. And you know, this constant comment I'm always getting, people say, "Oh, people still play surf music?" And I mean, I get it. I understand where they're coming from, because the majority of people, you know, it's not, it still is a niche genre, and it's always going to be a niche thing. And they might have heard it sort of in their subconscious on a commercial or mm-hmm. as for 2 minutes in a movie mm-hmm. quietly or whatever. But it's so much more than that. And it's so deep these days. Yeah. And there's so many different kinds of it. And I'm one of the few proponents of, again, having that sort of prefix on the music. Mm-hmm. So instead of just calling it surf, because it's too broad now, it's too general. I mean, you can say surf and it's this umbrella title, but is there metal surf? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is there traditional surf, which you should put things in that category and call it traditional surf? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because it's going to differentiate from all the other stuff. Is there punk surf? Is there, you know, and insert
garage
prefix
in India,
here.
I hear that all the time.
Absolutely. There's all different kinds, and I think it helps people appreciate all the different kinds if you have a name for it. Because all it does is if you call it all the same thing, everybody wants to fight about what you're calling it.
What would you label Daikaju as? Because they're at these surf festivals and they're playing instrumental music, but it's far from surf.
I would call them progressive. I would say that they're sort of equally parts progressive and metal.
And they play surf events.
Oh yeah, the records are very surf.
This is like
the records,
old Robin Grissel thing.
The records
at
you
shows,
can hear
you
the surf influence very strong. Mm. Live is a whole other story. Live is the spectacle and the show, and it's a wall of sound.
Yeah.
And it's really more like a metal band than a surf band. So it's a little bit. They're kind of an extreme case. Mm-hmm. They're really pushing the envelope. You know, and people say, "Is this still surf?" And a lot of people say, "No." Mm-hmm. I personally say, "Absolutely." And I think you have to give way to that. And
awesome.
Each generation, each subsequent generation that comes up has their own influences from their generation.
Yeah.
So a lot of punk kids, a lot of metal kids, and that's going to seep into the music. And it can't just be in the same little category as everything else. You have to differentiate it, I think, at this point. And that keeps it alive. Just like metal has been...
And we come full circle. Full
just
circle.
Like metal continues to grow and thrive because you have different kinds of metal and people will call things. This is black metal. This is doom metal. This is stoner metal. This is traditional metal. This is power metal. And that makes it okay for everybody to like anything they want, calling it whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And there's no negativity. Oh, it's all metal. But there's all these subcategories, and everybody's happy.
So what's your target date on this book? Because I'm very intrigued by this.
I don't know.
It's
years in the making.
Yeah.
And the deeper I get, the more I realize
you have more to do.
Yeah, I have more to do. It's a constant process, but I have to put a self-imposed deadline on it and just be done.
Yeah.
And put it to bed because it'll never end otherwise.
It'll suck up your life.
Yeah,
otherwise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So soon.
But that's
hopefully
lovely,
sometime soon, but I'll be able to put some kind of deadline on myself and finish the thing.
Well, we can pass this back over to Marie in that. What kind of future projects do you have? Do you guys have something you're working on at Tonga Hut, or is this?
Yes.
This is something we can't discuss at this time.
Well, there's no tangible anything yet.
Nothing. Okay.
We've just been kind of opened up to
utilizing new possibilities,
utilizing our trademark. Mm-hmm. You know, we have Tonga Hut, LA's oldest tiki bar. Mm-hmm. This is our trademark. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that we can't explore things that I've been doing and utilizing the name with this. So I make a lot of homemade syrups and liqueurs and such at the bar. Mm-hmm. So let's bottle
knows?
It. Throw our name on it. See where it goes.
Maybe one day. Maybe
rums.
One day. I mean, you guys successfully opened a Palm Springs location a couple years ago. So
we've been talking
Tonga
about
heads.
Opening a third and debating locations about that. Mm-hmm. How hands-on we want to be with the future running of it, or do we want to set it up and walk away? Because you know that's.
It's tricky.
So many factors.
There's a lot to learn there because you've seen Don said that back in the day. Trader Vic's became a franchise.
Right, right.
You know, all that kind of thing. So,
tricky.
So thoughts being tossed around in the Tonga
Hut world.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of meetings and a lot of things. Then, because this is our 60th year, our first goal is to either purchase a barrel from someone or do something where we can have a 60th anniversary blend come out before the end of the year.
Yeah,
so
that'd be
hopefully
awesome.
You'll see that by December, our December event.
Oh, that'd be rad.
Yeah,
that'd be really
we have
rad.
Our October event scheduled for Monsters and Mai Tais. Mm-hmm. September, we're having a luau to celebrate our big 60th, and that's going to extend through September and December, because as far as we know, the license was started in October of 58. Nobody's really gotten a definitive answer to that. But we're celebrating it from September, the end of September to the end of October.
Okay.
And then our Winter Wonderland by December, we're hoping to have this room.
fingers crossed.
Yeah.
That would be lovely to have our
own. Yes, yes.
The Tonga Hut rum barrel. Like a proper Tonga Hut rum barrel with Tonga Hut rum.
Right. In the meantime, we use real McCoy in our Tonga Hut rum barrel, but that's besides the point.
Well, that's probably a good one to wrap up on then. Both of you guys working these future projects. So I can say thank you very much. And how should people track you down again? We'll throw that out there. If people want, they can find you at Tonga Hut, but I don't know if you want to throw out the Tonga Hut Facebook pages and Instagrams.
Well,
and
all that stuff. Anything that has Tonga Hut in the name, you know how to find us. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the tweet machine.
All
I am Marie at Tonga Hut.
Maybe you'll gmail.com.
No. Marie.
Oh, the Gmail.
Marie. Wait, sorry. Let me go back. I am TongaHut@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tonga Hut. That name is Instagram. My personal brand is Marie King of Tonga on Instagram.
So you got to start posting.
And all that stuff. Mm-hmm, yeah. And this is Mr. Fiberglass Jungle.
Fiberglass Jungle.
Yeah, again, sort of the same thing. Fiberglass Jungle on Facebook. Go to the luxuriamusic.com website, and that will lead you to pretty much wherever you need to go.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
we really
so
appreciate
much.
It.
It was so exciting to have both of you. Music and Boo so well represented.
I'm glad it all worked out. Thank you. Thanks, Mo. Awesome.
So you heard them. Go to luxuria.com and look up Fiberglass Jungle to hear more of John Paul's surf music, his surf music program, lots of new stuff apparently for us to hear and learn about, and find Tonga Hut in all of the social media realms. They have a lot of live band action there as well, and a special event for anyone who is a fan of both of these folks coming up on August 1st at the Spare Room in Hollywood. Surfer Joe will be playing, and John Paul will be playing with that band. And Marie will be guest bartending, so you can see these two doing their thing together in that tiki realm, which is totally, totally fun that they get to do that together on Wednesday, August 1st of 2018, depending on whenever you listen to this podcast, at the Spare Room in Hollywood. So make sure that you don't miss that. It'll be a really great time. Super, super special thanks to John Paul and Marie for being on the show today. It was really cool. Really, really cool. I'm a lucky girl to have great friends like this. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by the podcast Inside the Desert Oasis Room, which brings you casual and entertaining conversation with artists, mixologists, collectors, and enthusiasts of the tiki world, all while enjoying a tropical cocktail or three. Check it out at DesertOasisRoom.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.